Okay, so the only thing left you have to do for this unit is to listen to me today. We don't have anything planned up for lab, according to the schedule. That's what I thought. So we just have to finish our discussion of cell division. We talked about mitosis last time. That brought us through the first four slides. Today we'll talk about the rest. So we're on slide five now, and this dark background picture that you see here is an example of what is called a karyotype. What does karyo mean? Just part of a cell. Where else do you see that root? Where else do you see karyo? Eukaryote, prokaryote. It means nucleus. Exactly. So a karyotype is a photograph of the important stuff that's in the nucleus, which are the chromosomes. A karyotype is a photographic and orderly arrangement of chromosomes. Now remember that we don't actually call the chromatin chromosomes until the chromatin gets very highly condensed. And when is the max? At what part of the cell cycle is the chromatin most highly condensed? In other words, when are the chromosomes the smallest they'll ever be? During metaphase of mitosis, exactly. And so karyotypes, those pictures, are taken at metaphase when it's maximally easy to distinguish different kinds of chromosomes. When they're the smallest and most compact they're going to be, you can easily tell them apart. But the cell does not pose with all of its chromosomes nicely ordered like this. So making a karyotype involves taking a snapshot of a cell in metaphase and then cutting out individual chromosomes, sorting them, matching them up with each other, and arranging them for a karyotype like this. This one happens to be a human karyotype, and that's why there are 23 different kinds of chromosomes. I've told you before that the number of different kinds of chromosomes that an organism has depends on the species. Well, for humans, that number is 23. There's a lot of organisms that have many more than that, a lot of organisms that have fewer than that. You can't really tell anything about an organism just from how many types of chromosomes it has. It's just the way things have worked over evolutionary time. But each chromosome, remember, has many genes on it. And so the reason that two different kinds of chromosomes are different is because they carry different kinds of genes. They carry sets of genes that correspond to different characteristics. All right? When you order chromosomes for a karyotype, as you see here, they're ordered by size. So they pick out the two biggest ones and call those number one, the two next biggest ones number two, and so on. Why are there two of each kind? What kind of cell was this taken from if there are two of each kind of chromosome? Probably, but what word would I use that would be correct no matter what? What word specifically means having two of every kind of chromosome?
Diploid.
Exactly. And somatic cells are diploid. But actually remember that germline cells are also diploid. Okay? The difference is that they go into different kinds of cell division. So this is a diploid human cell. And therefore, there's two of every kind of chromosome because there's one from one parent and there's one from the other parent. And therefore, for any of these numbers, for number one, for instance, which is in the box, there are two chromosomes that correspond to each other. We call those chromosomes homologous chromosomes. Homologous means corresponding to each other. And the reason they correspond to each other is because they carry the same... They carry the loci, which is the plural of locus, for the same genes. Remember that genes correspond to characteristics. Alleles correspond to traits. Well, a locus is just where a gene resides on a chromosome. So we can also say that a locus corresponds to a characteristic. So these two chromosomes are the same size, they have the same number of loci, and those loci correspond to the same sets of characteristics. The loci on numbers 2 and beyond, those control totally different characteristics. So if you want to use hair color as an example of a characteristic, if we pretend that it's on chromosome number 1, that would be a position somewhere on number 1. And you have two alleles for hair color. One from your father, one from your mother. Those are on the two homologous chromosomes. Now, since this was taken at metaphase, which is the middle of mitosis, so that's in the M phase of the cell cycle, this is well past the part of the cell cycle where DNA replication occurred, which you said is when?
The S phase.
Right. Back in the S phase, before the cell got to the M phase, so if you draw a pie chart again to represent the cell cycle, most of it is interphase. This is the M phase. Metaphase is in the middle of that. The S phase is way back here. This is G1, this is G2. S phase, that's when the DNA got replicated. We still don't see chromosomes then because it's not, the chromatin isn't condensed yet. But by the time you get to here, it's not only condensed, but it's already replicated as well. So even though there are two chromosomes here, and let's look at the cartoon version in close-up on the left, each of the two homologous chromosomes is replicated. So this one, which came from, let's say, the mother, has two sister chromatids that are identical to each other within it. And this one that came from the father is also replicated. Right? So there's four chromatids here in the two replicated chromosomes. These two are sisters. These two are sisters. Okay? So two double copies, basically. And each chromatid is enough DNA to be a full chromosome on its own, a full non-replicated chromosome, once they split, right? So really here, what you have is something that is four different chromatids, or they shouldn't say four different ones, four separate chromatids, but they are, two of them are identical to each other, the other two are identical to each other. But since it's a four-part thing, we call this pair of replicated chromosomes, homologous pair of replicated chromosomes, a tetrad, which simply means a four-part thing. All right, now, a while back I said that the number of different kinds of chromosomes that you have depends on the species, but we also give a symbol to that number, and that's N. N tells you the number of different kinds of chromosomes an organism has. And we also refer to N as the haploid number. Now, what does haploid mean? Right. It's a degree of ploidy. Ploidy refers to each kind of chromosome you have. Haploid specifically means having exactly one of each kind of chromosome. So a haploid cell would have N chromosomes. A diploid cell, therefore, has 2N chromosomes, right? Just like this cell. This has 2N chromosomes. There's really 46 chromosomes here because there's 23 kinds. N is 23, 2N is 46. But also, not only is this diploid, each chromosome is also replicated. So this cell has enough DNA to have 92 chromosomes. Right? Okay. Now notice that even though there's 23 types of chromosomes here, they only use numbers up to 22. And then for the 23rd pair, they don't say 23, they say X and Y. And that's because there are two classes of chromosomes within a cell. Or in certain organisms, including humans. And those two classes of chromosomes are called autosomes and sex chromosomes. Now, auto means what? Self is what auto means. Which is why when we look at ourself as an organism after death, that's called an autopsy. Ops means see. By the way, you don't perform an autopsy on a different species. If you look at a dead dog, it's called a necropsy. Necro means dead. It's only autopsy if you look at the same kind of... You look at yourself as an organism. But anyway, auto means self. And autosomes are called that because they're chromosomes that control that individual during its lifetime. Sex chromosomes, on the other hand, also do that to a certain extent. They include genes that the individual needs during its lifetime. But sex chromosomes also are involved in determining the sex of any offspring that individual will have. That's why they're called sex chromosomes. And so the 23rd pair in humans make up the sex chromosomes. And that's what you can tell the gender from. So this karyotype is from what? A male or a female? This is from a male, because males are XY. If the individual had two X's instead for the sex chromosomes, that would be a female. Two Y's would be inviable. Person that had two Y's, notice how much smaller Y is. That means there's a bunch of genes on the X chromosome that aren't on the Y. And if you had two Y's, you would be totally missing those alleles. Which means you wouldn't be able to survive. Okay, so these first 23, those are the autosomes. And these are the sex chromosomes. Now don't confuse that with the difference between somatic cells and germline cells. Somatic cells and germline cells are cells. Autosomes and sex chromosomes are chromosomes within cells. And both types of cells, somatic cells and germline cells, have both types of chromosomes. Okay? Now, let's go on to slide 6 and talk more about ploidy. I've already given you the definition of N. That's the haploid number. In a diploid cell, of course, there are 2N cells. This is not a human cell. to make the point of what's going on here, it's too confusing to use a human cell. There's too many chromosomes. So in whatever kind of cell this represents, N is 3. And you can tell that because it says up here 2N equals 6 and it tells you N equals 3. But you should be able to just look at this picture with no words at all and recognize that this cell has an N of 3. It has 6 overall chromosomes, right? But its N is 3 because those 6 chromosomes come in 3 sets. There's 2 small ones, 2 medium ones, 2 large ones. So just keep in mind that the N refers to how many different kinds of chromosomes, not to the number of total chromosomes. So N is 3 here, and therefore this is a diploid cell. It has 2N, which is 6 overall chromosomes. And so there are going to be, in a diploid cell, N pairs or N homologous pairs of chromosomes. The 2 small ones are homologous to each other, the 2 medium ones, and the 2 large ones. There's therefore 3 homologous pairs that aren't necessarily matched up yet. Eventually, if this is a germline cell, the 2 homologs, that's what you would call one chromosome in a homologous pair. It's a homolog. If this is a germline cell, these 2 homologs for each pair are going to find each other. They don't stay with each other all the time, but they're going to find each other. If this is a somatic cell, we don't even talk about homologous pairs. The 2 homologs don't care what the other one is doing. And they don't take steps to find each other. And I'll explain why once we get to the pictures for meiosis. But, any questions on these definitions so far? Okay. Let's go to slide 7 then, and talk about sex. Humans are sexual organisms, and sexual organisms have a certain type of life cycle. This circle here represents the life cycle, or I shouldn't say the life cycle, the sexual life cycle of the species. Humans are used by example since we are humans, we're familiar with ourselves, but actually this sexual life cycle is true for all animals, not just humans. We're just one species of animals, but it's true for all animals. And in fact, there's something about this sexual life cycle that's true of all sexual organisms, whether they're animals or not. But truly sexual organisms are found only in eukarya. What is eukarya? It's what? Well, the eukaryotic organisms are found in eukarya. It's true, that's why it's named that. But what is eukarya? Well, that's what eukaryotes are. Eukaryotes are members of eukarya. Eukarya is a domain. So it's a group within classification, right? There's 3 domains that cover all the organisms of Earth. Well, we're within eukarya, and all sexual organisms are within eukarya. There aren't any sexually reproducing bacteria or archaea. Okay? Now, that's not to say that every eukaryote is sexual. For instance, that piece of jumping cholla that falls off the main part of the cholla plant and tries to stick to your pant leg, that can sprout roots and become a brand new cholla plant that's genetically identical to the original one. That's not sexual reproduction. But it can also sexually reproduce. So it is possible for a eukaryote to be asexual. What I was saying before, though, is that if you're talking about a sexual species, then it must be a eukaryote. And one thing that is true of all sexually reproducing organisms, not just animals, is that sexually reproducing organisms undergo a generation to generation alternation between two very important processes, which are the processes shown in the yellow boxes here. From generation to generation, so not within a lifetime, from generation to generation, sexual organisms go back and forth, or alternate, between meiosis and fertilization. Okay? Now, I've already given you a definition of fertilization. Who wants to give me that good definition?
Two haploid gametes coming together to form one diploid zygote?
Exactly. Fertilization is the union or the fusion of two unicellular haploid gametes, sex cells, to produce one unicellular diploid zygote, which then goes on to be the new individual. And that's how we all started. Right? Well, you already knew that coming into this class. Or you knew coming into this class that you have to get an egg and a sperm together, two cells, to make the one cell that becomes the new human, right? And why do the egg and sperm get together? What does that accomplish? It produces a 9-month parasite, right? Endoparasite in the female. But, well, I mean, strictly speaking, that's true.
Yeah.
It's an organism that is feeding off of another organism within her, so it's an endoparasite. But anyway, what is the sperm and the egg getting together? Why do they do that? Well, yeah, it's for reproduction, but specifically at the molecular level, why do they do that? They get together because they combine their chromosomes, right? You have DNA from both parents. So fertilization is a combination of two cells' DNA, the two gametes. All right? Now, if all we had as processes between generations was fertilization, that means, okay, you have been created from your parents. That means you have two of every chromosome, right? Now, suppose you mate with another human. If all you have is fertilization, meaning your egg and his sperm get together, then now you've made someone who has four chromosomes of each type, right? Because you just gave two, and the male gave two. And then if in the next generation, there would be eight of everyone, right? Fertilization doubles the amount of chromosomes because it comes from two different parents. So if that's all you did was fertilization for each generation, then each generation would have twice the number of chromosomes than the previous generation. Well, obviously, eventually this would become unworkable. You can only fit so much DNA in a cell. And that's exactly why you need this other process, meiosis. Fertilization doubles the ploidy. Therefore, so that you don't have it completely double every generation, you also have to have a process that cuts the ploidy in half. That's what meiosis does. Meiosis divides it by two. So when we make our sex cells, our sex cells are not diploid, like the rest of our cells of our body. Our sex cells are haploid. And so are the sex cells of the other sex, the other gender. So a sperm cell is haploid, an egg cell is haploid, and when they unite in fertilization, you now have a zygote that's only diploid, not tetraploid, which would be four. You see what I'm saying? You go from N to 2N, and instead of going to 4N with another generation of fertilization, you go from 2N back to N with meiosis. So that when you get the two N's together again, you have a diploid cell again. And that's why you have two parts to the sexual life cycle. A haploid stage, where it's N. A diploid stage, where it's 2N. And N just depends on what species you are. For humans, N is 23, 2N is 46. All right, any questions on that? That's true not just of humans, all sexually reproducing organisms. So in slide 8, we see very similar sexual life cycle pictures here. But this covers all the three major groups of organisms that are sexually reproducing. Animals is shown on the left. That includes us. We're animals, right? So this is the one we just looked at. But there's also one for plants and algae and one for fungi. Notice that all of them include meiosis and fertilization, like I just said in the last slide. The difference here is the time spent in the haploid stage versus the diploid stage. So let's look again at animals. Us, since that's most familiar. The haploid stage is very brief. A sperm does not survive very long. It either dies after a short time if it can't find an egg to fertilize, or it dies during fertilization in the sense that it injects its DNA into the egg and that sperm no longer exists. So there aren't sperm out there living long lifetimes. And same for eggs, right? If an egg is not fertilized, it gets thrown out as debris along with the other menstrual debris, right? For mammals, similarly for other animals. So it's only the diploid stage, only if fertilization takes place and you produce a zygote, does that zygote then go on to be a full individual, a multicellular organism. The zygote is already 2N, and that zygote was created out of fertilization, right? But to become an adult, an animal is a multicellular organism, to become that multicellular adult, that zygote has to become many cells. Well, since the zygote is already diploid, it becomes many cells by undergoing cell division that does not change the ploidy, right? Which is mitosis. That's why however many cells are in the adult, 10 trillion or so for humans, those all came from the zygote making... Well, the zygote splitting into two identical copies, then each of those splitting into two identical copies, and so on. Okay? Once you hit sexual maturity, then you have germline cells that can go on to meiosis instead of mitosis, and that produces gametes. You get two gametes of two individuals together, you're back to fertilization, and you produce a new zygote for the next generation. So we spend our lifetimes in the diploid stage as animals. Now let's go to the other extreme before we go to the middle. In fungi, which is just the plural of fungus, they kind of have the reverse situation. Most of their time is spent in the haploid stage. So a fungus, like a mushroom, for instance, that is also a multicellular organism, just like we are, right? So it has a body. But the cells of that body are haploid cells. Fungi are haploid adults. right? What happens is that you have gametes produced by mushrooms, or I mean fungi, including mushrooms, just like we do, and those gametes can get together in fertilization, just like in animals. That produces, of course, a zygote, which is diploid. But the difference here is that that zygote does not undergo mitosis in order to become a multicellular diploid fungus. Instead, that single cell, that zygote, immediately undergoes meiosis, which reduces the ploidy in half, right? And that produces spores, haploid spores, which can be released into the air and land, like on your food in your house. And then those spores undergo mitosis to create more and more cells, which grow up into a haploid adult fungus. So the adults spend their lifetime in the haploid stage. When it comes time for those adults to reproduce, they need to make gametes, right? But since they already are made up of haploid cells, it wouldn't make sense for them to make their gametes via meiosis, right? Because meiosis would reduce it in half. They already only have one of each chromosome. Therefore, since they're already haploid, they make their gametes by mitosis, which doesn't mess with the ploidy. It makes new cells of the same ploidy. But if you get gamete together with another gamete, I mean a gamete from another fungus, then you have a new zygote, and it becomes new spores for the next generation. Plants, on the other hand, are kind of halfway in between animals and fungi. Notice that they have major time spent in both parts of the sexual life cycle, in both the haploid and the diploid phase. So there are, for a single species, for one species of plant, there are two kinds of plants. Ones that are called gametophytes, and ones that are called sporophytes. Now, phyte is a combining form that means plant. And so gametophyte literally means gamete-producing plant. Sporophyte means spore-producing plant. But both of these are multicellular plants. They're two different forms of the same species. The form that we're most familiar with and that's bigger is the diploid stage, the sporophyte, produced just like diploid animals are, union of two haploid gametes during fertilization to produce a zygote that undergoes mitosis to create a multicellular plant, right? A sporophyte. That sporophyte plant then produces spores by meiosis, kind of like a fungus does, except it's coming from a multicellular organism already. Those spores then undergo mitosis to become multicellular other forms of the same species, gametophytes. See, this is a multicellular adult plant, and this one is too. They're the same species, but they look different. It's kind of like humans mating, and then they produce a pig. And then pigs mate, and then they produce a human again. Two different kinds of animals. So these gametophytes are haploid multicellular plants that then produce gametes by mitosis, since they're already haploid. And if those get together, then you produce a zygote for the next stage of the sporophytes. So it goes back and forth between multicellular haploids and multicellular diploids, and therefore, in plants, we call this alternation of generations. So from our viewpoint, that's probably the weirdest of the three. Plants don't think it's weird, though. All right. How many of these do I have? Let's go ahead. This is kind of a change in topic, so let's take a quick break and then finish it up. Come back at 9:00.